podcast fra E24.
Matleveringskjempen Volt har fått en ny global og ung toppsjef. Marianne Wikula dagens gjest i E24-podden. Hvordan ser 33-åringen på konkurransen med andre giganter i den nye økonomien? Får vi snart levering med droner og roboter? Og hun åpen for at Volt-budene får fast ansettelse i Norge, som i Tyskland? Marianne Wikula, welcome to E24-podden.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you here. And you are the global CEO of Volt, familiar to absolutely the majority of our listeners, I definitely presume. And you are quite new in the role. You took over in the fall. How has the start been, the first half year it should be?
Yeah, it's been 6 months. I've been with Volt for 8 years, though, so the company is not new to me. And I've been building the story since we were 100 people, so a lot of things are the same, but then again, it's also a bit of a new role, a lot more policy, communications, legal than I had before. It's been fun, but also challenging.
Yeah. And how nerdy are you really when you're leading such a big tech company?
Well, I mean, I'm an engineer by training, and we are a tech company with our DNA, which means we have a lot of data. We don't even use half of the data we have. We should do that much better. A lot of decisions are based on A/B tests and so on. So, I mean, you have to like data and numbers to be in this industry for sure.
And you are from Finland. You were acquired some years ago by the enormously big DoorDash company, but you are your own company in your own right. Massive company. Out of Finland, do you think you would have succeeded if you started up in Norway?
Why not? I mean, if you think about 12, 13 years ago when Volt was founded, what was the Finnish food delivery scene like? And what were the challenges we had to overcome? Where generally people are very vastly populated, low density, quite similar to Norway, right?
Yeah.
Not necessarily the economy where people are the most used to spending money on restaurants, tipping, and so on. So making the so-called unit economics work was not easy at all. But then again, I think it was actually our blessing that as we started scaling the company, we first had to figure out how to make this profitable. And I think Norway could have been an equally good ground for exactly the same story as Finland.
Yeah. Both countries were in the forefront of using technology and digital solutions, right? If you had started in, say, Germany, it could be difficult to see what the customers really want because they are quite behind when it comes to rolling out digital solutions compared to the Nordics.
Our industry is funny in the sense that as we're a consumer company, our growth and adoption of our tools and our services by people are actually largely driven by the selection and the quality and the affordability we bring. It's like, are we bringing something new to the market that makes lives of our customers extremely much easier? And there are markets that you would never guess that have been great successes for us if you would just look at from the angle, like, is this market tech savvy? If you look at global data points like internet penetration or something similar. To give you an example, we operate in countries like Kazakhstan or Georgia, where this business works very well as well. So I think we're tapping into a mega trend of people wanting convenience and people having smartphones across the globe. So this business seems to work in all kinds of markets.
Yeah. And you are then taking care of, so to speak, one region and DoorDash, another region, massive regions. And then you also have Deliveroo in the whole ecosystem, right?
Yes, exactly. So since 4 years ago, we've been part of DoorDash. They are the market leader in our industry in the US. And together we are basically the biggest company outside of China in our industry. And recently, last fall, we also acquired a business in Western Europe called Deliveroo, headquartered in London. And yeah, now we are learning our new life of having two big brands in Europe, Volt and Deliveroo, and what it means for us.
Yeah, but you don't have both in the same country, right?
Or no, we are like separate
yeah.
from that point of view.
How do you find the competition you're facing? In Norway, a lot of people have obviously also heard about Foodora, but you also have things like Uber Eats entering core markets for you as well, like Denmark, Norway, Finland. They have been in Sweden for a period as well. There's quite a fierce competition out there, isn't it?
You're right. Our industry is very competitive. And we face a lot of competition in more or less every market where we operate in. Some markets, we might have even five players in the market. So having new entrants is not a new thing for us in the sense that it would be a completely unheard of in our industry. Sometimes there's a wave of exits from markets. Sometimes there's a wave of new entrants. And it's quite business as usual.
Yeah. And in some ways, you could compare yourself not just to like Foodora, but also to, for example, Uber, Bolt. You have a tech platform and then you're expanding services on it. Could it be interesting for you to also try to eat yourself into more the markets of Uber and Bolt, for example, their core offerings on their tech platforms?
So what we are focusing on right now is firstly going beyond the restaurant use case. Actually, already roughly 20% of our business comes from non-restaurants, so groceries, pharmacies, pet shops, and so on. For example, here in Norway, we've started working together with Norgesgruppen, and we have many grocery stores rolling out across the country, right, as we speak. Beyond that, another area we are investing heavily into is merchant technology. What does that mean in practice? Investing into tools that help our partners, whether they're restaurants or grocery stores, to sell online, even in their own channels. So, for example, unlocking online fast deliveries in their own web shops. And then we're also testing things like storefront or in-store kiosks so that we help our partners go online.
Yeah. Could you also have driving services?
Right now, not in the plans. One day. You never should say no to anything, but at the moment, we are not planning for it.
Yeah. How do you make sure to have the best tech user experience out there? What's important to think about then?
Yeah, how we think about this is, first of all, an amazing question, because what we've seen is that the way to grow in this industry and be the most relevant company is to have a superior customer experience. And how we think about it is essentially through the lens of a customer. What do you value in a service like ours? And it's essentially the selection, the quality, and affordability. Selection basically means, do we have the shops, the restaurants, the stores that you want to buy from? That's why it's extremely important for us to work with a vast variety of different kinds of players in the market. Because ultimately, also consumers have very different kinds of needs. Somebody loves to order Pepe's pizza. Somebody else wants to order Dig pizza. So we need to have a broad selection to cater all kinds of needs. Then on quality, it's obviously, how fast do we deliver? And even more importantly, do we deliver on time? So we've seen that customers actually care more about being on time, on the time we promised, whether it's 25 or 30 minutes. That is not that big of a deal. And then obviously, if things go wrong, we have the local customer support who responds fast and helps you through the problem, as in our industry, unfortunately, mistakes happen every now and then. And then obviously, like, consumer expectations on price never go any other way than up, meaning that, you know, the more affordable, the better. And every day you want more affordability. So that's continuously an area that we work on. And where all this leads to is essentially, when you do things right, you get great retention. Yeah. So customers come back organically without you having to just put money into incentives and discounts and all kinds of schemes to lure people back in.
Yeah. But the app experience in itself could also be a game changer for a customer comparing different services.
Absolutely. Right? That's definitely part of the quality piece. Yeah. We, as Wolt early on, started from, like, we wanted to build a world-class experience in the application. And it's really hard to measure. It's hard to put a price on things like smooth transitions, no glitches, beautiful design. But it shows at the end of the day in things like us, for example, having the highest ratings in App Store in our industry.
That should be something to strive for continuously, right?
I agree.
You recently landed some new deals as well. And you have a deal with the Norwegian grocery chain Meny.
Yes.
They themselves obviously have an online shop, but why isn't Norwegians shopping more groceries online? Most of the things we do, we tend to think online, but when it comes to groceries, it's not really taken really off yet. We have other actors like Oda, obviously, but most, I mean, vast majority of the groceries in Norway is still bought physically.
I can't claim I'm an expert, so I'll share what I think I've learned through building this business. And I'll start by saying Norway is not the only market. If we look at Europe, we operate in 30 countries, largely in Europe. The online penetration of grocery generally is fairly low. Usually we're talking about a single-digit percentage point of the total grocery market being online. So it's definitely not very online in many markets where we operate in. I think Norway, we're talking about 2-3% of the market being online. So indeed, it's very nascent.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen, the starting point is that, is there selection online? Are there even opportunities for Norwegians to buy online? And I think many brands have not yet invested into the capability, which obviously also drives the fact that then the penetration isn't growing either. And that's something that we're now investing into together with Norges Gruppen to bring these opportunities for people. And also an interesting fact I learned yesterday is that Norway has one of the highest grocery stores per capita the world, which means that also the convenience factor is different here. And what I mean by that is, in some countries, you might need to drive 10, 20 kilometers to get to your nearest by grocery store. While here, it seems that you have a grocery store in almost every corner. And hence, obviously, the fact that what is the effort that you as a consumer need to take to walk to the store here is smaller than somewhere else, which then drives also a different need for online.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, we have a lot of remote corners in Norway. You know, we are not so densely populated. So you have the cities, obviously, but should be a market out there. There are a lot of people that still need to drive some distance.
I agree. If I look at Finland, where we have a big partnership with one of our leading grocery and retail groups, Kesko, that we work across the nation in very small towns, meaning 20,000, 30,000 people. Our best-selling stores or merchants in those towns are the grocery stores. And those owners are even telling us that, hey, you're really the lifeline for my business and how I can grow in this city.
At the same time, a lot of retail actors, they are also trying out quick commerce. And as you can see, from your part, you have signed with a lot of Norwegian retail brands like also Vita, Dogman, Lyreco, bakeries, and so on. What's the end game here? Is it to try to have all the markets?
So we're talking about building a shopping mall in your pocket. So indeed, our vision is ultimately that we are the door to your city in your pocket. We want to, whatever is local, whatever you want to buy locally, should be also available in a vault. And what we do see is that when people try these different categories on vault, it also increases the full size of the pie, meaning that it's not out from, hey, okay, now you ordered groceries, you're not ordering restaurants anymore, but you're just generally increasing your purchasing frequency.
Yeah. There's a lot of things happening internationally also in your field and with a lot of actors. Where do you see the market moving in the next years, if you should look forward and come with some predictions?
So there's a few things I'm sure everybody is investing into, which is growth. Everybody wants to grow in the market. We've also had years of, let's call it, profitability has been in focus for a lot of the businesses. I don't think that's going to go anywhere either in the short term. So everybody will have to balance between growth and profitability, which probably will mean we will see some more market entries happening, but we'll also hear about more markets being shut down by some players. Let's see. And then other trends I can definitely see in the quick delivery space is more and more use cases, more and more type merchants wanting to offer their customers deliveries in less than an hour, no matter whether it's us with or someone else. Electronics retailers, toys, home and DIY types of shops, definitely a trend that I'm seeing across the board. And then another one would be subscription. So companies offering their customers a monthly fee with which you can waive your delivery fees and get frequent deliveries more affordably.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Are there a lot of to learn from America, where you had Amazon early on, and where a lot of customers now expect deliveries very, very fast?
There's few things we've been able to learn from the US since the acquisition 4 years ago. One thing more for us as Europe, not even for Wolt specifically, what I would say is risk appetite and willingness to invest into ventures that are very technology driven. Amazon was one of the first companies in the US who didn't have really a balance sheet. All of their investment went into expenses and building technology and warehouses and so on. And there were a lot of doubters back in the days. Now, people in the US understand the kind of you have to take a lot of risk and invest ahead to be able to build these world conquering companies. And we haven't seen that many in Europe yet, which leads still to a lot of doubt about, hey, these companies are investing a lot of money, they're burning so much money, will this ever be profitable? Fair questions, but also kind of we need to learn that this is the way how digitally native companies are being built. And I see that in some of the discussion around, for example, how platform companies are built from Europe. There's a lot of debate around the profitability, while in the US, similar businesses are celebrated for how rapidly they're growing and what kind of guidance is they're giving. So that's like a culture change that should happen in Europe. And then more for our business, the sheer fact that DoorDash is the leader in the second biggest market in the world in our industry means that they've just built so much technology, services and solutions to that one market that then we've been able to bring here rapidly. And one good example would be actually our subscription, Wolt Plus, that our friends in the US started a few years earlier. So we've been able to fast track a lot of the best ideas so that we could skip the things that didn't work and just take the playbook on the things that worked the best.
And is it comparable, the Nordics and the US in general, when it comes to e-commerce, e-retail?
No. If you look at a lot of the services available, online penetration, for example, just in our industry, we often try to calibrate the maturity of different markets by looking at a metric called orders per capita. So simply, how much do people buy food online per capita? And even the most mature markets in the Nordics are half of the journey that compared to a lot of our markets. Then again, I think there's also areas where the Nordics are more advanced, actually. If you look at some of our e-tailers, so online commerce players, we actually offer fairly fast deliveries because we have warehouses across the countries where we operate in, right? Or in the Nordics. While in the US, sometimes you order something and the warehouse is on the other side of the country, which means there's a 4 to 5 day delivery time. Whereas here in the Nordics, I think a lot of customers are already quite used to expecting, hey, I order something, it comes in 2 days. Of course it comes in 2 days.
Yeah.
And then for us, the next step is obviously then, why 2 days? Why not next hour?
You mentioned China. Is that market not available?
So China is indeed the biggest market in our industry. Haven't been there in a while since COVID, so I haven't actually experienced the industry myself. Should go, no, to myself. But they're ordering things online and expecting them to be delivered right away it's the way of life. That's how the country works. You can get pretty much anything delivered in less than an hour, maybe even less than 15 minutes. Not just food, not just groceries, but literally anything. And it's a fairly fierce battle with the local companies that operate in the country.
I can
but it's
imagine.
All Chinese.
Yeah, yeah. It sounds like a tough market.
Yeah, not sure it's the most lucrative market to enter organically unless you want to put billions and billions.
Yes, exactly. And we come back then to the growth versus profits argument again also there. But it seems like still in the markets, there is an understanding that you need to grow first. But in China, it might be more extreme. You need to grow very long time before you can turn a profit, probably.
Indeed. I think you can do two things at the same time. You can have healthy underlying unit economics, but at the same time grow rapidly. All in all, though, it will require investment. This is a business of scale, and scale is driven by one, what's your market size? And then two, kind of like how big are you in the market where you operate in? And in some markets that are huge in nature, whether it's the UK or USA, you can be a smaller player in the market and still run run a very profitable business, but the smaller the market size becomes, the harder it gets.
Yeah. Here in Norway, we have had a court decision recently, and it comes down to a bigger question in several countries. Independent on-demand temporary workers, they are independent, or should they be employed? Well, for example, Volt. And in this decision, where some hired by you, delivering for Volt, and their union, they took it to court. They want to be employed. And then we had first the district court in Norway called Tingretten. They decided in favor of the plaintiffs. Then we had the appeals courts, what we in Norway call Lagmannsretten. And they decided in favor of Volt. But now the plaintiffs want it tried in the Supreme Court. And we will see if what we in Norway call Høyesterett admits the case. Do we need some clarity here?
We definitely need some clarity here. This is not just a Norwegian thing. If you look at most countries in Europe, this is a new industry. This is a new economy. 15 years ago, there were no jobs created through platforms. And now it's become fairly big. It's not just about food delivery. It's about all kinds of different industries that create jobs online. Construction, beauty, logistics. There's hundreds of thousands of people in each Nordic country, for example, doing work through platforms. And we still haven't properly found a way how to have shared rules of platforms. And EU has, a few years ago, set the platform work directive that now the member states are to implement by end of the year. We obviously are looking forward to that implementation, creating the clarity, because I think the worst situation for us all is the inclarity. What's important for us is finding a way that combines the best of both. The best of being an independent contractor, being the freedom, the flexibility, you being able to choose whenever you want to work, where you want to work, what kind of tasks you want to take, but also then the safety nets of employment, meaning if something goes wrong, you have insurance. You're not going to fall off the cliff if you don't have, you're kind of, not everything is okay. And some countries have found a way to do that already that we could use as inspiration. For example, in Greece, we have independent contractors as couriers, but we do have a CBA, so a collective bargaining agreement, where we've together decided on the shared rules of how this is done. So there are already examples, and looking forward to also seeing this being implemented in Norway.
Yeah. And let's see how the courts decide. But I see politicians already saying that if Volt wins in the Supreme Court, if it goes to there, then the laws need to be changed, because there are some then meaning that you should hire them so they are covered when it comes to pensions, social security, tooling costs, and so on. How would you react if that happens? Either that the Supreme Court votes in favor of the plaintiffs, or if the politicians change the laws?
So we would obviously have to see how it would be exactly written. But generally what I would say to this is there are examples that show that you can create an independent contractor model with the safety nets you're describing. For example, how this works in both Austria and Estonia, both in their own ways, is that we as a platform can withhold the social security charges from the contractor pay. Be it pension, be it tax, be it social or sickness insurance, to make sure that those safety nets are in place in the right way. Ultimately, what matters to us the most is just simply clarity, because I don't think anybody largely benefits from sitting in court fights for years and years in the unclarity.
Yeah. But in Germany, they are employed, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So it could happen in Norway as well. You're open to it, that they are directly employed by...
Ideally, we could offer a dual model, meaning that a courier can decide which world do they rather prefer. Do they want to have the further protection of employment, but then also much further direction by the employer, right? Of like how the work is being done, what kind of tasks do you accept, when do you work? Or then the freedom of being the IC. And some companies also operate in that way. We've actually also hired some of our first couriers in Norway to pilot this. And yeah, we're very open to dialogue in finding the right, let's call it Norwegian model for this country.
Yeah. And when you tried this pilot, have you seen any patterns, what they mostly prefer?
This is very early stage. We still have, we're talking about a handful of people so far. So we'll follow up when we have a bit more learnings.
When you're looking forward now, it's a lot about scale also in your business. How do you scale it up in the new markets you enter fast enough to have control over the expenses?
Yeah, so it all starts from our discussion earlier about customer experience. That needs to be set right. Otherwise, you're going to just create a leaking bucket, meaning that you're going to throw money that's not going to return anything. And often when we enter a new market, the first task, when first of all you've always hired the local team, is building the selection. So that takes quite a bit of time, depending on the size of the country or the city where you're going into, to have the selection that you are ready to start with. And then once you have that in place and the right quality, you start your customer acquisition. And what we've learned along the way is a few things. One, you need to be very careful with discounts. Right amount of discount incentivizes people to try and later come back. Too much incentivizes people to try and never come back. So it's a very fine balance of what is the, what's the right type of first time incentive we offer. And the second thing we've really seen, that especially in early stages of growing the business, it's not about, you know, buying all the billboards of the city. It's much more about being tactical and targeting the audiences that are the pilot customers, or the, let's call it, first generation. So whether it's influencers, hyper-local influencers, going to local companies, being very tactical about where to find the first customers. Yeah.
And I think I have to ask you as well about something I think a lot of our interesters are keen on. You have a unique experience. You are quite young and you are the CEO of a very big company already. How do you take decisions? You have so many markets. You have so many different scale-ups. You have different laws and regulations in so many of the markets. You need to take probably a lot of decisions each day. How do you manage?
Yeah, it is a lot of decisions in different contexts. But the starting point, obviously, is that this doesn't work if I have to be the one who makes all the decisions. So having the right team, having people who are better than I am, and trying to push decision-making as close to the problem itself for us to move fast. That's one of the things we really believe in as a company, that we need to be able to move fast. Velocity is one of our core strengths, and hence decision-making should also happen where it's closest to the problem itself. Obviously, not every single day the decision can be done by the first people, and it gets escalated and sometimes big and material to the company, and also I or other senior leaders need to get involved. And often it comes into things like, hey, have we tested this? Then it's fairly simple. We go and run a test. We offer something to a group of customers and see what they actually do. Don't need to make a lot of decisions based on what my gut feeling is. We can actually see what the customers do, and that helps make the right decisions. Then the harder ones are really often the ones that combine society, public affairs, communications, the business, legal, trying to navigate something that's not always very clear what the right decision necessarily is. You have inputs from all the teams, and then you just simply ultimately have to make a judgment call that's based on your past experience and what you hear from the experts in the team. And we often say that there's two kinds of decisions. Decisions that are two-way doors, i.e. decisions you can reverse, and then decisions that are one-way doors, which are really hard to reverse. And at least my philosophy, and I think this more broadly is also Walt's philosophy, is that if it's a two-way door decision, a decision that's more like a test, and then you can say this was the wrong decision easily, you should just rather be very fast and start doing and learn by doing. But then if it's a one-way door, hard to reverse, you should take the time and debate rather than rush.
Oh, that sounds like a good advice. But when you have the two-door thing, and you can have probably often data coming in real time, then it's easy to have it as a testing ground then.
Exactly. Indeed. And I've learned the most decisions are actually two-way doors that are very easy to reverse. So we run across this company hundreds and thousands of tests all the time to understand how different audiences react to what we think might be a good idea. And that really guides how we grow the company.
Finally, are there some markets in your region that you still haven't penetrated at all or very loosely that you want to focus more on going forward?
In one way, it's all of our markets that are not super deeply penetrated. We often say that our biggest competitor is the fridge.
Yeah.
While people are thinking what to eat, they go and open their fridge while they could look for other alternatives out there. So if I compare any of our markets to some of our most mature markets, I talk about the orders per capita comparison point. South Korea is actually the most penetrated market in the world in this metric. And even our most penetrated market is still less than half of that. So we think there's a lot of growth ahead of us.
And it's funny you mentioned that because every company stands in the same as the customer here. I mean, we have gone from big storage of, for example, cars to delivery just on time. So you want the customer to behave a little bit more like companies. Don't build up your whole fridge. Take it just in time.
Yeah, although I would also say that our job is to serve all kinds of use cases.
Yeah.
Wolt is not yet a great place to order a, let's call it, 4,000 NOK weekly grocery shop and get the same thing delivered every single week. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't build it. Ultimately, I think it's our job to serve all kinds of use cases. But we've started where we've had our strengths, which is that, hey, get this thing delivered in 30 minutes fast. And what it means, for example, in grocery often for us is it's not just, hey, I need, you know, something, one thing very quickly. It's more a, hey, I have my refill, my half a week groceries. I need more fresh fruits, more vegetables, some dairy products, maybe something for the weekend. And it's been a good start, but we definitely have some work to do.
Good. And a final question, a little spaced out question maybe, but the drones are coming everywhere. Could they be a bigger part of your business going forward?
So we've been actually piloting different kinds of autonomous delivery ways, both drones and delivery robots. We have a lab in the US that's also been building its fully owned delivery robot called Dot. And in Helsinki, we already have tens of robots doing deliveries for our customers. We've been also testing drones. I think we are further with the robots, actually, and I hope that next year we can already start expanding beyond Finland.
Good luck with that and all the other work, Marianne Wikola. Thank you so much for joining us here at E24 Podden in Oslo.
Thanks so much.
Produsent her i dag Erik Holm Nyvold. Jeg heter Sindre Heierdal. På snarlig gjenhør.